Bobby Ingram, Curtis Ennis. Know that we've been loyal even when we wasn't with it. A trust is lost for the news. Every night for Hallis in your ears. You.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to 79th and Hallis. It is your boy, Flows Andolini. Of course, one brother, Scott Barbchair, Scott on Twitter. This is episode 196. I asked Scott before we were starting this up because I never keep track of the episode numbers, but somehow in Scott's fat brain, he keeps track of everything. So we'd like to welcome you all to a new era of 79th and Hallis. And why is it a new era of 79th and Hallis? Because this is like the third era of Bears coaches we've been around. And so with every, right? John Fox was the coach.
John Fox was the coach our first season. Yeah.
So we were in the Fox era, the Nagy era, and now the Eberflus
third
era.
Third coach, second GM.
Of the Flus era. I'm not saying Eberflus.
The Flus is loose.
Our guest later on, JJ Stankovic, which you will hear from, help me correctly pronounce Eberflus. And so we'll just say Flus because Eberflus is three syllables and I'd rather say one. But anywho, the Bears, of course, hired GM Ryan Poles and head coach Matt Eberflus
Can we also say this is like a two-part series?
Yes.
To like conclude the season before we go in hibernation for about a month and a half. To see if basically anything happens with free agency. Of course, you'll get our free agency pod and our draft recap pod. We're not going to do a draft preview pod because neither one of us are Mel Kiper. So we're going to do a draft recap pod.
I will do a draft preview pod. So I don't know what Scott's talking about.
How you going to do? We going to find somebody to get in and do?
No, I have somebody do with me. I know what I'm doing.
I'll come on in too. Fuck it. I ain't going to a little bow wow me.
Fucking will do it live. I'm like Scott. Live. I pay attention to college football heavily. Matter of fact, of course, the season before last, with you know, that was Justin Fields and Ohio State's shortened season. What did they now? When the Bears, I'm talking about the Bears, I say they. When I'm talking about the Buckeyes, I say we. So when we were playing, it was like what, six game, seven game season, and it was hard to watch these games. But this past season, I've watched so many games. Disappointing Ohio State season. But anyway.
But like I was saying.
So, yeah, we will go over draft
picks. Yeah, we'll do that. And the episode 200 will be sprint champ, but training camp, we're going to do something special for y'all. Just stay tuned. I'm working on some shit right now.
It is special.
So just know you're gonna want to be in Chicago in August. I'll just say that much. And then in the part two, this episode's going to be focused more on Flukes. Part two will be focused on polls. We're going to have Jason Leisure. He's going to join us in episode two. Joe had a part of an interview he did, with Eberflus that we're going to play at the end of the pod. And he got a part of an interview he did with polls that we'll play at the end of the polls pod.
And shout out to my boys, Kevin Fishbane and Adam Johns.
Big shout out to Kevin Fishbane for including us in his article
on
The Athletic.
It was, during this process, it was a sit-down interview. Me, Herb Howard of the Bigs, my dog Herb, Adam Johns, Kevin Fishbane, Athletic, and we had a chance to interview them in this one-on-one setting. And Kevin and Adam started first, and Herb and me, and we just got to have a chance to bounce off questions. And there was a few we all asked, but I brought the one question that focused, because the other two questions I had were basically what you heard in the press conference. But you did not hear what we will play after we talk with JJ Stankovic is the enormity of what it means to be a Bears coach. And he really explained it so well. And yeah, it's a new day. But before we dive into specifically our specific thoughts on Eberflus and how it feels, let's just get overall reactions. How do you feel, Scott?
I'm cautiously optimistic. Of course, we came on here last week and we did our pod about immediately what happened after the hirings, but after watching the press conference, I understand there's a lot of mixed emotions from Bears fans right now. I feel like a lot of Bears fans have been mad at the media for being quote unquote negative. And I see it as two ways. I see it as there's some very few media who just like to be negative. But at the same time, the Bears have not earned the benefit of the doubt. So I'm not really mad at the quote unquote negative feedback that the media has been given. Even when I was listening to.
Let's get specific. My boy David Hall, I don't know him personally. He's more of the games, and he's everywhere. Of course, he's big on what's going on with, you know, Jim Harbaugh. And some fans are like, how could you do that? That's his right.
Yeah.
It's his right to want to have a certain coach who he thinks is the best fit. Also, he's been around to see terrible
That's another thing. Hall, Reader have been around for a long time. They've seen a lot of shitty football. And we know just from covering last season. There was some games I didn't even want to come to. Like, I was just tired of watching bad football. And if this is just one season, imagine what they feel after doing this for decade and a half, two decades of watching football.
Bro,
it wears on you.
Me? That's what I'm saying. And so some people like to get on Dan and say, Dan Weeder, or that, oh man, he's very, very negative. I'm like, well, do you know how long he's covered the Bears?
Yeah.
I'd be pragmatic too. But what you have to know, first of all, Dan is my boy. Really, really like him as a person. He's a good dude. But he's also seen so much more than I have.
Before I met him, I thought he was like a miserable guy, like a lot of Bears Twitter who is not in the building. And yes, I'm gonna get my pavi on here. Who not in the building? By the way, LeBron, I saw the injury report. Don't duck me tomorrow. But anyway, but yeah, so I thought he was just like hating on the Bears, just be hating on the Bears. But no, he likes the Bears too. It's just like we've been fed a shit sandwich. It's not just fans, but it's media. Like, we've been in the media room sometimes just listening to that. He like, you're full of shit. So I'm not upset at how they feel about it. With, you know, and Cap, we know Cap is king optimist. Like, nobody's more positive than Cap. And Cap was like, who gives a crap? Win some football games. So it's like everybody's fed up. So like, for me, when I heard the press conference, I'm not gonna lie, I was fired up. I was drinking the Kool-Aid because they sounded like they knew what they were doing. And now we won't know if flus or polls are good till we're sitting here February 2025. Then I think we'll know. I don't care if the Bears go 13-4 next year. We're not gonna know till a couple seasons. I'm not falling for the Nagy trick that we went through. 12-4.
7-4.
12-4 division title.
But Scott, you saw the G.
I saw the G. I saw it a mile away.
One day I'm gonna Photoshop you in a Back to the Future cover, and it's gonna be you saying, I'm gonna go ahead in time and find out what happened.
I tweet out the Negro Diamonds, man. Remember I said in the NFC Championship game, Jimmy G's either gonna throw a touchdown or pick, no in between. Two minutes after I sent that, he threw that fucking interception. But
you know, it's my point was that with media, and I really love the Bears media's people. They're really, I mean, to welcome us as independent journalists, you know, especially Scott coming on his first year covering the Bears. And I mean, when Scott had to go cover the Raiders and I wasn't able to make it, they welcomed him.
Man, I was so for 100. When I went for my first game in Vegas, I didn't know anybody. I told him I was your brother. Shout out to Kevin Fishman. He was the first one to show love. Kevin Fishman, Herb, Jason, everybody's cool. And rest in peace, JD. JD helped me show how to get to the to the Raiders press room. So everybody there has been showing me love. So like, I have no, and I also got to give a shout out to the Clippers media team. Clippers media team been showing me a lot of love because their relationship with Pavi and Thomas, they've been showing me love. So I just got to give we're doing some real media shit right here. But I want to give a shout out to both media teams. For the Bears also, and the Clippers.
The Les Grobstein,
yes.
Who was covering the Bears for Lord
have long mercy. Time.
Long, long time. He would be at Bears games. He sat behind us a few times. I don't know if Scott remembers.
I've seen him. Also, the legendary Jim Rose was been in the row. It was me, her, Jim Rose, or some other older guy. I don't remember the name. He had the one with the cane. And he sat up there with his. He was in the bathroom. He said, man, it's a lot of brothers in this front row. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, he always does that. When we get there, he said, our people on the ride.
Before you get to your point, I just want to say. Yeah. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm cautiously optimistic. I like the press conference. If you could have, like JJ said in our interview, and you'll hear later, winning the interview doesn't really matter, but I was impressed. And now it's time for them to get to work.
Facts. But yeah, it's rest in peace to Les Grobstein. And really, I still appreciate Chicago Legacy Media. But moving forward into the hiring of Matt Eberflus, Scott was able to give his perspective on what he thought. I have to be honest, when they first hired Ryan Poles, I thought, we'll get into that. That was the knockout the park. My question was, okay, what is Ryan Poles going to do with the head coaching position? Because it's kind of like a we would call this in logic, you know, it's just the premise follows the conclusion, deductive logic. It literally, you're deducting from premise, conclusion. That's how you do it. And so with hiring of a general manager, of a head coach, it's owner hires general manager, general manager hires head coach hires his staff. And it's sort of this declension that goes up and down. And so now I'm like, okay, Ryan Poles has to get that first guy right. I was like, Eberflus was on my list. I knew the three finalists were Eberflus, Dan Quinn, Jim Caldwell. And as I believe this was Adam Jones' question to him about, you know, what was his, because I'm not going to play their audio, that is their audio, but what was his understanding of taking the Bears job? And he was talking about how, you know, Jim Caldwell had been in the building several times. Dan Quinn had been in the building. And Eberflus won them over with his detail. And so that alone has me like, man, okay, Bears have not been detailed for quite some time. And it's incredible because some folks are like, oh, man, you know, Ted Phillips wasn't even there. Ted Phillips was there at the
Was Cap, by the way. People who not in the building talking about they saw what the fuck was going on.
Big Cap. Ted Phillips was at the press conference. He was sitting directly next to George McCaskey. Big smile on his face. What I noticed is George McCaskey wore a stoic look on his face. I think, I don't know if George McCaskey understands the enormity of the situation. I think George understands the enormity of what he's in.
Yeah, I got that too.
He stepped into the role of Ted Phillips. It makes me realize how off he has really been off hands in letting Ted Phillips run the Bears since, what was that, 2000?
99 or 2000.
And letting Ted Phillips be the person who hires, who selects people. When you looked at the interview last year, before last season started, Ted Phillips took a lot of the questions. George told us at the end of the press conference at the end of this season that he's stepping into that role. And so for him, you know, it was all new. And to have him, I really think, make a good selection of Ryan Poles, the thing then fell on Ryan Poles to make a decision to Eberflus. And as you heard us on 2 Minute Drill, me, Scott, and Pierce, Scott, you were defending Dan Quinn.
Yeah.
Pierce was defending Jim Caldwell. I was defending Eberflus. I like Eberflus because I wanted a defensive coach. Offensive coaches being offensive, being head coaches is overrated. Now, hear me out. There is no one size fits all. A defensive coach will always lead you because he'll bring an offensive mind who he separates himself from, and they can do two different things. Not necessarily. And someone who's an offensive coach doesn't necessarily mean they'll call plays. Frank Wright of the Colts calls plays. But as you saw with Andy Reid and the Chiefs, he can call plays sometimes, but sometimes he can have play call and switch. Of course, we know.
NFC title game.
You know.
McVay and Shanny were out stupiding each other.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, JJ is going to tell you all later about a CEO coach. And I really see Eberflus as being a CEO coach. I liked how Scott called himself one of the few people who watch Hard Knocks of the Colts. He's not the only person. I did too. I remember he had them turnover shirts. What were they called? Ball Hawk shirts,
yeah.
Which were corny, but it was, they bought into it. And it was hilarious.
I also like how the defense talked to each other. Like, they're like a real, like, Darius, like, the final episode when they lost to the Jaguars and got eliminated, like, you could just see, like, they was like, they didn't want to blame the offense, but it was like, nigga, we did our job.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. They took it personally. And every time the Colts would be down, the vocal leader of that team is Darius Leonard. It's not Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is actually kind of quiet. Like, yeah. Darius Leonard was all in all them huddles. Flus was in those huddles. And you can see Flus, he was very, very vocal. Like, Frank Reich's kind of like the more calm dude. And, yeah. And Flus is calm, but I feel like Flus can get in your ass if he has to.
Yeah. It's funny because when in his press conference, he said, get your track shoes on because we're going to run. I'm like,
okay. Yeah, so everybody's like,
that's
Eddie
the one.
Jackson don't want to hear that. I actually have a hot, it's not a hot take. I believe Eddie Jackson's going to have his best season next year. We're going to get back to ball hawk Eddie Jackson. And I know we make fun of him, but Eddie Jackson actually did not do bad tackling last season.
I don't disagree either. I'm intrigued to see how this meshes with the current group of players because I think the Bears struggled with their stamina during the season.
Oh, for sure.
And in my experience watching them practice, I never saw any any work on conditioning. But of course, this is the NFL level. Condition now in college, those dudes are well conditioned. They're also like 19, 20. And so their bodies are going to work better than someone who's 26, especially when you're playing football. That's for more, most people who are, let's say you're working out from 19 to 26, you know, four times a week. And I'm still in great condition, 26. A football player is three times more than that weekly for someone. He takes on getting hit by a Mack truck every single game and getting in if we're doing it comparable. And so their body takes much more of a beating than yours does. And so when he said, we're gonna put on those track shoes, we're gonna run, I'm like, okay, the Bears need to work on their stamina. They need to have a solid, the Bears needed so many more coaches and so many more people in the front office because it's not a job that one person can do. And so that's why I can't wait to talk to Jason Friday and talk about the assistant general manager position, analytics department. But with Eberflus bringing in Alan Williams of the Colts, defensive back coach, I believe, and then Borgonzi, if I'm correct, linebackers coach. I mean, he coached Darius Leonard. I want that same success for Roquan Smith. It's just, I think these were positive hirings. And I think Matt Eberflus was a good hire. Of course, there's people who want, which I think is a good segue into Jim Harbaugh. I think, Scott, you had something to say about that.
I was going
to
save that for, well, I mean, we can talk about it right now. We can talk about it right now. But I was going to, I want to get Jason's opinion on it too. So we'll just ask him twice. But my thing on Jim Harbaugh, and by the way, Jim Harbaugh stands will be my goofy mug of the week. Tomorrow on I'm Not Gonna Hold You, and just a little cheap plug, me and my homie Wild Wilds be my co-host this week, so we're gonna get into that. But I'm just tired of the Jim Harbaugh shit for a couple reasons. One, we know we talk about how everybody likes to get mad at the Bears, whether it's media or fans. There's a lot of shit, and I mean a lot of shit, over the last 20 years that I've been a Bears man, even more specifically the last 11 years. The Bears have missed the playoffs 9 out of the last 11 seasons. The Bears, the last time the Bears won a playoff game, I was 22 years old. I'm going to be 34 in 8 months, okay? So that tells you how damn long. There's a lot of things to get mad about with the Bears. But one thing that the hill to not die on is motherfucking Jim Harbaugh. Here's the thing. I'm not sitting up here saying Jim Harbaugh is a bad coach. I will not say that. Jim Harbaugh is not a bad coach. You don't win those games that he won in San Francisco and be a bad coach. My problem here is you have people who are shitting on Dan Quinn last week when this nigga made the same amount of Super Bowls as Jim Harbaugh. And Jim Harbaugh, I always say, oh, he's a winner. He won everywhere he went. What did he win? Last time I checked, championships is what matters, right? Like, why does it matter? Tom Brady said it when I was watching Man in the Arena. He was like, yo, we went 18 and 0 heading into the Super Bowl. I still think that was the greatest team of all time. When you don't have accomplishments, it don't fucking matter. We don't care about 18-0. We don't. The Warriors get made fun of every week for 73-9. Every damn week. So it doesn't matter if you don't finish. It's like he made 3 straight NFC championship games. Lost 2 of them shits. Yeah. One of them, they was power driving Eli Manning, and they still lost. They was like power driving this nigga. Like, yeah. When I saw Joe Burrow get destroyed by the Titans, I was like, I have not seen a quarterback get his ass whooped like this since Eli Manning in the NFC Championship game. So they lost multiple times. And then he's not even the best coach in his own goddamn family. His brother's better than him. Yeah. John Harbaugh's a better coach than him.
And I like to think John Harbaugh is honestly one of my favorite. Him and Mike Tomlin are two of my favorite coaches in the NFL because Mike Tomlin had to deal with the aging Ben Roethlisberger, and he had to revamp his team during multiple eras of player personnel.
Yep.
And then, of course, John Harbaugh had to shape his offense
around Lamar Jackson,
completely around Lamar Jackson. And if they ever said, "Oh, do you want John Harbaugh as a coach?" I'd be like, "Yes." Yes, immediately.
And I'm not saying that Jim would have been a bad coach of the Bears. I'm just saying also, you got to look at what comes with it. He wants a fucking John Gruden deal. You don't give I'm not giving $100 million to anybody who's not on the field.
Yeah.
And those are quarterbacks. Quarterbacks get that amount of money. You don't get that to a coach. And on top of that, the Bears did talk to him. Chris Carter said on Good Morning Football this morning that the Bears talked to him. And if anybody would know about what's going on with the Vikings, it's Chris motherfucking Carter. You know what I'm saying? And even I even think George kind of alluded to it in the press conference when he asked him. He was like, well, we went that way, and let's just say we didn't go any further. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
So they talked to him. But it's just let's not sit up here and blame the Bears like they fucked up just because there's a good chance he's going to Minnesota. I think that's the wrong hill to die on.
No, I think so too. And this is not a podcast of us promoting Bears and being – we're not Bears .com writers, you know what I'm saying? That's Larry Mayer. That's the homie Larry. That's his job. And he will, you know, do his thoughts on the Bears. Of course, we have shitted on the Bears for a long time here on 79th and Hollis, and more so on the Barber's Chair Network. So, you know, if we're giving cred, we're giving solid cred. Also to that side, if we're looking at the entirety of Jim Harbaugh as a coach, when he was with Stanford, I don't know why many people consider that this incredible.
I'm glad
incredible
you're run. Not skipping over that.
Because now, hear me out. He had two bowl games at Stanford. There was a Sun Bowl and the Orange Bowl. He is 1-1 in those. In the seasons where he was a coach, he had two losing seasons, an 8-5 season, and that 12-1 season where they went to the Orange Bowl. Now, of course, if you remember that season, that was 2010.
Yeah,
I believe that was 2010.
That's when he had Luck and he had Sherman too, right?
Yeah, that was the 2010 season, brought to you by, and then Taylor, I forgot his name, Stephen something Taylor, was their leading rusher. He had a 1,000-yard rusher, like 1,500 yards from scrimmage, and you had Andrew Luck, one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. That was a great season that I would mark him. He had a great season there in terms of being a coach. I wouldn't consider that this winning tradition, because there are hundreds of college coaches. If we take FBS and FCS and even Division II, hundreds of college coaches who have had success like that. Now, if you look at his tenure at Michigan, he has won one bowl game. Now, he's been over 500 outside of that shortened season. He was 2-4, but I'm not going to really count that against him because it was a shortened season. He played 6 games. Who knows how they could have turned that around. But when he was there, he lost the Orange Bowl twice. He lost the Outback Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Citrus Bowl. The only win he had in a bowl game was his first year there, and it was the Citrus Bowl when they were 12-10, when they were 10-3. That is it. So am I going to consider that a winning tradition? No. What I will say was his best run was with the 49ers. He was conference championship berth, Super Bowl conference championship, and then they didn't make the playoffs that year, but they still had an over 500 record. But is that something where I say he is a winner everywhere he went?
No.
Is that a winner? If he had multiple bowl wins in each program, Stanford and Michigan, then I would say that's a winning tradition. That's not a winning tradition. You know what I'm saying? I just don't. It's semantically a winning tradition, but it's not what we would colloquially consider a winning tradition.
Yeah.
It is. He was the eye coach at Stanford. He has been a disappointing coach at Michigan. They had their first successful season because they beat the Buckeyes. But then when he played them real niggas in the bowl game, he got smoked. Of course, those went on to be the eventual national champions. So you have to give him some credit. But I'm not sure I would consider him just to be, this is the person. But of course, when the one thing you know knew about Jim Harbaugh and running a team is he wants to run it like a college team. That's what many college football coaches prefer over NFL, is the fact that they are their own GMs. They run everything. When you have to deal with Urban Meyer coming from Florida, then he went to the Buckeyes, and then, of course, he became the Jaguars coach. He's like, I don't like free agency. Oh, I don't like drafting. Yeah, of course you wouldn't. Well, you could get everybody. And so I do not think the Bears are wrong in moving past Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, I wouldn't have cared if he was a coach. If he was a coach, I would have said, okay, it wouldn't have been a bad hire. Don't get us mistaken.
No.
It would not have. I don't think.
I wouldn't have loved it, but I wouldn't have been mad at it either for the right price.
Exactly. I think the three finalists were good picks. You know what I'm saying? I don't think Dabble or Leftwich were ever in their sphere. I don't think
Dabble wasn't enough after this whole Brian Flores shit.
I know. They were never considering those two coaches were never considering the Bears. But the coaches that were considering, the 15 people that they interviewed, because unlike other teams, the Bears are actually interviewing minority coaches and giving them a chance, because the Giants were not doing that. And so I don't like to give George McCaskey credit, but I will give him credit.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I will give him credit for this. Someone like even meeting Ryan Poles at the airport, I thought was a cool touch.
I didn't know okay. that Ryan Poles is only 6 years older than you and only 3 years older than me.
I feel old. I think both things can be true. George McCaskey has done a shit job of overseeing the Bears for quite some time. He made good moves with Ryan Poles.
What I'm hoping for George is that he's doing, it seems like he's taking a page out the Michael Reinsdorf book. Michael Reinsdorf signs the checks and lets AK and Eversley do his job, and he gets the fuck out of the way. I don't even think Jerry Reinsdorf even remembers that he still owns the Bulls. That's how long I haven't heard this nigga name.
And it's funny because, you know, Eberflus was talking about, and we'll, of course, on Friday, you'll hear from us with Jason about how Ryan Poles was talking with Bill Polian, but Bill Polian did a good job. Bill Polian did a good job. But according to my sources, the people who had the biggest impact were Soup Campbell and Tanisha Wade.
Let's get a round of applause for these black people on Black History Month.
Soup Campbell and, according to my sources, now this is me with actual sources telling you, Soup Campbell and Tanisha Wade played an integral part in the hiring of Ryan Poles as the GM. Of course, the head coach, that was Ryan Poles' decision. But they played an intricate part and were very active in asking questions that cut to the core of, can you deal with these players and hiring all of these coaches, but also how are you going to put together a successful team? So shout out to Soup. Shout out to Tanisha Wade. Shout out to her for introducing me to Soup. But yeah, and so this is, you got to give the Bears credit on the thorough process. You got to give the Bears credit on the thorough process. I think Matt Eberflus is a good signing. But as you will hear from JJ in a little bit, and as you heard from George McCaskey himself early in this, the end of the season press conference, that don't necessarily mean anything. Fans will not be satisfied until there's a win. And if we're sitting back 5 years from now, 6 years from now, and they have a Super Bowl win, George McCaskey will be forgiven by everybody. Yep. Eberflus will be a legend. So yeah, I'm happy with what was happening. And for the first time, there's a spark of hope inside of me. Yeah, so right now we're going to bring on a special guest, friend of the pod, JJ Stankovic. Of course, you know him as the writer of Colts, Colts.com, if I got that correct. JJ, you can correct me, of course. But also, you know him as a Chicago legend beforehand, covering the Bears the second time on. We'd like to thank you, of course, for coming on. But we're going to talk about the man of the hour. Albert, Coach Eberflus. Did I get that correct? I've been struggling all week to figure out how you say it.
You got that correct. It is Eberflus. Although, I don't know, I imagine if he wins some games, we're going to see a lot of Eberflus
Nice.
Going around the city.
Nice. So first question that we have for you on this person, because of course Bears fans will only know him by stats, and stats really only show you a portion of who the person is. And your experience, of course, being with the Colts as an organization for this past year, how would you see him as personally? What was your interaction with him personally? Then we'll go, of course, into football.
Yeah. First up, guys, thanks for having me back on the show. Love the work that you guys do. It's really, really cool to see you guys show up in press conferences and stuff and asking big questions. So that's awesome. With Flus, like, he's a really good leader. Like, that's the first thing that you need to know about him. And like, you can look at some of the stats, you can watch the tape, but like the way that he commands a room is really impressive. And it's not just that he commands the room, it's that he gets buy-in from everyone in the room. So, you know, I know there are some folk kind of, you know, snickering at that Hits mentality thing that he talked about in his press conference, but like, dude, like the Colts just bought into that. Like, you had guys like the game against the Titans we had in week three where Tennessee won, but like, man, that defense played really well. And there were guys who were running like 20 yards to be the seventh, eighth man on the pile on Derrick Henry, because that's how you have to play when you play for Matt Eberflus. Like, and especially when you're playing Derrick Henry, you got to do that to take him down. But like, you know, guy, like Darius Leonard, I mean, the perfect example of a guy who bought into what Matt Eberflus preached and had just unbelievable success with it. Darius, three-time first-team All-Pro, three-time Pro Bowler, highest-paid linebacker in the NFL. For my money, he's the best linebacker in the NFL. And this year, this dude he had a bad ankle for probably more than half the season, like 9, 10, 11 games. And it never once looked like he wasn't giving it everything he got on the field. And he finished the year with 8 forced fumbles and 4 interceptions, which is something no player has done in NFL history before, not even Charles Tillman. And it got to the point where, like, we would ask Darius so much about punching the ball out, and all, he'd get all these questions about Peanut. Finally, he was like, dude, like, I'm the one doing it. Let's call it the maniac knockout. But, like, his mentality was, like, that's the kind of player that Flus wants, and that's the kind of buy-in that you need to thrive in a Matt Eberflus defense. And the Colts have it in Darius Leonard. He certainly is not the only player on that defense, but when you look at the success that he's had coming from South Carolina State as a guy who was, you know, rated by a bunch of people as the worst pick in the 2018 draft, you know, to have the kind of career he's had so far, it speaks a lot to not only his talent, which is certainly first and foremost, but that buy-in again for Matt Eberflus's philosophy when it comes to how to play the game of football.
Now, so I had a question. So when his name started being mentioned in all these different interviews, it's like that was one that kind of came from left field. I mean, I was familiar with him because I watch Hard Knocks. I feel like I was one of the few 5 people who watched the in-season Colts Hard Knocks. So I was familiar with him and like how he had that whole defense rolling. So I thought that was an interesting name. I was more of a Dan Quinn guy myself. Of course, I was on the island by myself because Joe did not agree with me whatsoever. But what do you think for people to say, well, it's a first timer and we don't know how he's going to be, and you know, you need an offensive mind for Justin Fields. How do you think he's going to be able to balance that? As far as being, we want to have the defense of this team be straight and also develop Justin at the same time. I know a lot of the things he mentioned in the press conference was mainly about defense more than it was Justin.
Yeah, I think the first thing to say there is that he's not going to call defensive plays, which I think is a perfect fit for him. And, you know, sometimes coaches, you know, it's easy to kind of put him in one bucket or the other of like, all right, all coaches should call plays on offense or defense, or no coaches should ever call plays. It works on a case-by-case basis. Some coaches should be calling plays. Some coaches shouldn't be calling plays. And Matt Eberflus decided that he can take kind of that bigger view of the team by not calling plays. And I think that's really smart. And by the way, hiring Alan Williams to be his defensive coordinator is a really, really good move. A guy who knows the system inside and out, has a lot of experience, has previous DC experience, a really sharp, detailed guy. So just from that standpoint alone, the defense should be fine. But, you know, then, you know, I'm going out and hiring Luke Getsy. Like, dude, that's a great hire. Yeah. Taking him away from the Packers, but a guy who had a head coaching interview this year with the Broncos, you know, that's an impressive hire that Matt Eberflus made there to take care of the offense. But, you know, I think him kind of taking that step back and being that sort of CEO-type head coach, like, no one in Buffalo cares that Sean McDermott has a defensive background. Right. No one in Tennessee cares that Mike Vrabel has a defensive background. Those are perennial playoff teams with good offenses and, you know, their own different ways. And I think that that's kind of the model for Matt Eberflus to follow. It might not be that, you know, he goes and he steps in and it's like, all right, well, I'm a defensive minded coach, so we're going to do things this way. That's not who he is. I think he can come in and kind of take that bigger picture view of the whole team and then kind of just, again, set that tone of like, there's going to be no slacking. There's going to be no loafing. There is going to be nothing but effort, takeaways, avoiding dumb penalties, and intensity. And, you know, again, you can laugh at that all you want and be like, oh, what a stupid cliche. But like, player, that matters to players. That stuff matters to players and resonates with players. And I have no reason to believe it won't do that in Chicago, just like it did here in Indy.
I think.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, it's interesting because when it comes to, you know, a coach calling plays versus a coach not calling plays, there's no really tried and true method. It's sort of basically a case-by-case basis because Frank Reich does call the plays offensively. Yep. Of course, he has a long history. You know, he was the Colts offensive coordinator, if I'm correct, before he was the Eagles offensive coordinator. Yeah, the Eagles offensive coordinator before he was the Colts head coach.
Didn't he work with the Colts before the Eagles too? Because I was watching Manny Arena last night and I seen like him – with a Colts shirt on, like when Brady and Manning.
No, Frank. Frank was here as like a quality control during like the last year that Tony Dungy was here, and then in the Jim Caldwell years. Okay. And like he tells a story all the time. He got kind of like initiated because Peyton Manning just like messed with him for one day. And when he handled Peyton, like giving him a really hard time, then he was in.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was with the Colts. He was with the Cardinals, Chargers, and then Eagles too.
Yeah.
And I think also what we've seen this weekend, a lot of these offensive masterminds have been kind of like, they've been overdoing it. I think we saw in the NFC Championship game, Shanny and McVay had a who's dumber fest for like the whole fourth quarter. And it's like maybe you having a coach who's not worried about that and just having Getsy be completely on, that might be a good thing. And when I heard how much Aaron Rodgers loved him, Rodgers wanted him to be the OC, that's pretty much it told me everything I need to know about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm also wondering, because Eberflus talked about being a physical team and, you know, dominating the line of scrimmage. Obviously, even though he has a defensive background, I'm still thinking of him being under Frank Reich. And we know what the Colts do on the ground. We know what Jonathan Taylor does on the ground. And what I like about the Colts is they're one of the few teams in the NFL who did not abandon the run. I mean, if we had Jonathan Taylor, I would tell the Bears, you know, don't abandon the run either. But do you think, of course, this is just, you know, opinion, but do you think that sort of mentality of not abandoning the run could have rubbed off on Eberflus? Because, of course, you know, the Bears have David Montgomery. He's not Jonathan Taylor, but he is a really good back.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think the biggest thing to take away here, Joe, is that what Matt Eberflus has learned from Frank Reich has been flexibility in how you game plan. Because, like, nothing gives you a kick in the ass like your starting quarterback retiring 2 weeks before the season in 2019.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, shoot, the Colts are 5-2 with Jacoby Brissett as their starting quarterback in 19. And then he got hurt and, you know, the season kind of fell apart from there. But like Frank has had to put together different game plans for four different starting quarterbacks in his four seasons in Indianapolis. And some years that's been, hey, like we got it. We got Andrew Luck in 2018. Like we can win vertically with him. Or 2020, we got Phillip Rivers, like an absolute technician in the pocket. And then, so, you know, this year it was, we got Jonathan Taylor. We got to run the ball. Because this dude's incredible. And I think that flexibility where he's not married to one way of looking at offense, because Frank Reich hasn't been able to do that and has had a lot of success with the offenses he's had over the last 4 years, I think that really impacts how Flus views the game. But I even go back to, you know, I'm a Mizzou guy. So I've been on the Flus hype train since like 2007. And those Mizzou teams that Flus was a part of, they consistently punched above their weight, first of all, but they're different kinds of offenses that they ran. They had this dynamic, when they first got there with Gary Pinkel, they had this dynamic run heavy offense with a lot of play action with Brad Smith as their quarterback. And that offense was great. And then they brought Chase Daniel in, who we know in Chicago, Chase, but for my money, Chase is one of the smartest quarterbacks to ever play football. One of
the smartest people, and elite check.
I love watching him in college.
Elite back.
I thought he was going to be incredible in NFL.
Yeah, and like that dude's going to be an offensive coordinator someday. But like this again, it's the different ways to go about winning, and it's not just one way of doing it. He has so many different ways, you know, people he can draw from and experiences he can draw from, that I think make him a really, really encouraging head coaching candidate. And the same goes for defense. Like, yeah, he came up in the Rod Marinelli, you know, school of defense. But this year the Colts played more man than they've played in the entire time that Flus is there, because he thought it was a better fit for some of the players on the roster. And, you know, Colts finished this year with 33 takeaways. So it works out. And again, that flexibility, that curiosity and willingness to grow and expand your system and the way that you do things, I think is a real, real positive trait of Flus.
So my next question would be like, kind of like with the media side, because we all know in Chicago media is like stepping into the lions then. And I think he did a pretty solid job of handling it in the press conference, but we all know there's a difference between handling a press conference and having a press conference. We like on a 3-game losing streak. How do you think his personality is going to be able to, can he handle the Chicago media? Because I feel like that's something where when people were pressing Aggie, he would get like irritated and kind of talk down to people like he's like fucking Bill Walsh or some shit. What do you think how do you think Flus is going to be able to handle it with whatever heat and pressure? Because I kind of feel like not just the media, but the fan bases, we fed up. We like, okay, we want results. We don't care about coach speak. What can you do?
I think the only thing that matters there is if he gets the results. I mean, he could be the most, you know, flowing, open, honest, introspective guy at the podium. But if the Bears are 3-14, no one's going to care about what he's saying.
It's true.
I mean, you know, I think he very much leans toward the I'm a football coach first type mentality, which, you know, again, like I think that came across in his press conference the other day. Like he's a guy who he wants to talk football. And sometimes as a head coach, you can't only talk football, but I think, you know, we'll see. Like, you know, like Lovie Smith was not beloved for his press conferences, but no one cared for a number of years because the Bears won a bunch of games. And, you know, you, again, you can be a great quote, but if you're not winning, it doesn't matter. You can be a bad quote, and if you're winning, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
So I've talked to a lot of people about this over the last couple of days because Flus is not – he may not be the, you know, oh, the guy's, you know, just giving us gold every single day at the podium. But he doesn't have to be if he wins. And I think that's just the, you know, the important thing is, you know, I was on someone's show the other day, and they asked me, like, do you think Flus won the press conference? And I was like, I don't really care. Like – I'm like, how many coaches have won the press conference and then haven't won, you know, Jack after that? Yeah. Like, that doesn't matter as much.
That's true. It's like when you think about Bill Belichick, I think the last time I saw him have a winning press conference when someone asked him about long snappers. They asked him about long snappers. Yes. And he went on a beautiful 9-minute talk. And I was like, first of all, I didn't even really care about long snapping, but this is incredible. Outside of that, I would never say he ever won a press conference.
He won a press conference when he said on to Cincinnati. That's my favorite Belichick quote ever.
But you know that he won games. And so before we get you out of here, I just want to know your opinion. Obviously, you're covering the Colts. That is where your position will reside. But I was looking at a picture Dan Wiederer showed, 2018, after the hiring. I'm guessing that was Nagy. I was like, there goes JJ sitting right there. And so you've seen the process from hiring Nagy. And then, of course, a little bit from outside, you've seen the process of Eberflus. How do you grade the Bears? You know, because I feel like you have a little bit less bias than me and Scott will, because I heard his interview. And of course, even though I'm covering him, the inner fan of me is like, oh my goodness.
I'm
drinking the Kool-Aid.
Super Bears, Super Bowl. See y'all in Vegas in 2024.
But as an outside looking in, what would you grade this process of hiring Eberflus?
Yeah, I think it's pretty well. I think they did really well for themselves because, I mean, look, like Flus is getting opportunities elsewhere. Like he had a second interview with the Jaguars, and it's not a coincidence to me that the Jags wanted to talk to him again when they have a first round, you know, number one overall pick at quarterback too. So, you know, from that standpoint, I think, you know, the Bears did really well just to talk to him another time. But the process of it, you know, to bring him in and then have him have this very clear vision. Like, I mean, it was like they hired him and it was like one day later, it was like the OC job is Luke Getsy's if you want it. Like that is walking in with a clear plan and saying like, these are the people I want on my staff and this is how we're going to do it. And that to me showed a lot of preparedness on Eberflus's part, a lot of foresight, and then just a really, really good plan. You know, we'll see what else happens with the rest of the coaching staff, but, you know, bringing in Alan Williams as your DC, really good hire. Bringing in Dave Borgonzi to coach your linebackers, a guy, I mean, shoot, like Dave Borgonzi had as much of a hand in Darius Leonard being a great linebacker as Matt Eberflus has had. And when you got Roquan Smith on your team, that's a pretty good thing to look at. So I'd give him a really high grade, I think. You know, I really think highly of Eberflus, just kind of getting to know him over the last year a lot closer and getting to hear players talk about playing for him. I think it's a really, really good plan that the Bears have for it. Now, granted, it's the NFL. It's really hard to win in the NFL. Sometimes you can have a great plan and it doesn't work out. Yep. But I think the plan and the process of getting Flus in the building and then getting some of this staff assembled. So, you know, to me so far, I've been impressed with it.
No, I of course I've been impressed with it, but I'm glad you were able to share your knowledge and give us a bit of perspective on who Eberflus is. And happening so, of course, we're going to segue into the brief interview I was able to sit down. It was Herb Howard of the Bigs, Kevin Fishbane, Adam Johns of Athletic, and have a brief interview with the new head coach, Matt Eberflus. I guess on a more personal level, have you ever had a chance to sit back and just feel the enormity of being a Bears coach? Of course, with respect to the Colts, respect to the other teams that interviewed you, the Bears on Sunday is almost like a religious experience for many fans. You know, I'm born and bred on the South Side. Everybody in my family is talking about this right now.
Yeah.
Texting me and wondering what's going on.
Right.
But for you, have you had a chance to, I guess, take that all in? And does that frighten you? I mean, obviously, you've been around the league for a while.
Yeah.
But what does that pressure feel like?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'll just give you a story to kind of illustrate that. You know, when I found out I was the Bears coach, you know, it was me and my wife, you know, so obviously, you know, Jacksonville's in play, and you know, Chicago was in play, and you're going, hey, okay, I need about 30 minutes, you know, so I'm sitting down there with Kelly because I brought her down and say, okay, then we looked at the options and we said, okay, you know, I'll, you know, go with the Bears. And we walk up the stairs and say, we got to go tell the girls. So we go up there, and of course the girls are teenagers, and you know, one's 21, they're sleeping, of course, right? So it's 9 o'clock. Of course they're sleeping. I would be too if I was that age. But so we wake them up, hey, come on over to Gianna's, you know, my youngest daughter's room. So then we go over there and wake him up and say, hey, you know, dad took the job, he's the head coach of the Bears. And then Kelly told them, and then I called my mother, who's 80, turned 80 this year, and she's winners in Naples. So I called her, I told her the whole story. I said, hey, I said, you're talking to the head football coach. And I couldn't get the last part out because I got choked up.
Yeah.
I said, because I never said it. You know, you're talking to the head football coach of the Chicago Bears. And I said that, you know, and I just got all emotional. Just all at once, just kind of flooded over top of me. And I was like, oh my, you know, 30 years in this business. You know, you started in 1992 as a student assistant, you know, working for Gary Pinko and being Dean Pease, who's the coordinator, another one of my mentors. And then all these years later, it just comes to a head right there. But yeah. And then you talk about the tradition of being the 17th coach of the Chicago Bears and all those listed coaches.
Yeah.
Just surreal. Yeah. It's really amazing.
Another minute or two.
Like, I don't take it lightly. Yeah. I do not take it lightly.
So that was Coach Flus's take on the Bears and the enormity of it. Because for me, I heard all the good things about the things that they want to do, the things that he wants to do as head coach. But my question to him really focused on the enormity of being the Bears coach and everything that came with it. Like I said, you know, I was sitting next to Herb Howard, Adam Johns, and Kevin Fishbane, and we all had great questions. And mine specifically was, man, the Bears are a religious experience. Well, I've seen priests, pastors in services short so they can get to the Bears game or they can get home to watch a Bears game. Me and Scott as kids, how many times, Scott, did we, after the church ended, turn on the TV in our pops office
all the time
to have the Bears game going?
Like I said, look at right now, the Bulls are the number one team in the Eastern Conference. And what are we sitting up here talking about? What's dominating the sports radio? The fucking Bears.
And so I when I told him, like, respect to the Colts, Bears are different.
It's a different beast.
It's a different beast.
And that's why I asked JJ about the media thing, because Colts media ain't Chicago media. Three main medias that's probably hard to deal with: Chicago media, Philly media, and New York media. Those are three markets you cannot be soft in.
And so I'm, you know, and as JJ said earlier, you know, it's not about, I don't really care if they want a press conference, and I agree, but I will say he didn't win me over. Nothing was going to win me over until I see the on-field product, but it looks good so far, and I think this was a thorough and solid process. And I'm excited to see for what's next. Of course, free agency is going to be big, but Ryan Poles talked about building to the draft more than anything. And he also talked about getting picks back. I'm intrigued.
Which is what I was going to say. I'm like, it's going to be hard to build a draft when the criminal before you left us with 5 draft picks.
That's true. But there's always a chance to get 2 back. The Bears don't draft, so what, the 3rd round or 2nd round, or what is it?
I think it's 2nd.
No first round pick.
No first round.
And them
pick.
Getting a
but first I live round with pick. That because we got Justin. But
you take that. That is the one time that I would say I'll take it. So we'll see.
Oh, one last thing before we head out. What did you feel about Justin Fields actually being at the press conference?
That showed who he is to the team.
Yeah.
That showed how it matters. That shows that he is that franchise. So, yeah. Yeah. I think that shows how much and how much of important, how important he is to that franchise. Yeah. I was shocked. All of us in the media were like, what?
Yeah, when you tweeted, I was like, what the fuck? Justin's there? And they brought him out like the president.
Yep, they did. I was like, I didn't know Justin was even there. So it's just pretty cool to see that.
Well, I knew he was in the city because he was at the Bulls game a couple of days before. But. Yeah.
I'm happy. He's a Buckeye, and I don't care. I will be biased.
You love him extra because he's a Bear and a Buckeye.
If I got a chance to talk to Justin one while I tell him, I will kill for you. Because you're a Buckeye and a Bear. You hold a special place in my heart. He can do no wrong. He can throw a backbreaking interception. I'm like, I will turn into Hawk Harrelson. That's just a good play by the defense. Just give
that. I'll be like that Will Smith meme when he's looking the other way.
You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, this was 79 The Highlights, episode 196.
196, part one of our new era series.
Part one of our new era series. We'd like to thank my boy J.J. Stankovic, writer of the Colts.
Yes, sir.
And I'd like to thank Eberflus for sitting down
shout
with me
to Coach
and
having Flukes. A chance
to him. Having a chance to talk with him. We will have another podcast Friday where we talk with Jason Leisure and we get into my interview with Ryan Poles. So we will catch you all then.
Yes, sir.